this gentleman right, and this is Suzanne's tape. Suzanne, Jim's out on the Hara, and Suzanne came in to report, and this is noon, we're eating, she's already eaten, had a sandwich, jelly bread, so to speak. This Saturday, 23rd of January, 1971, Channel 1 right, beginning of Suzanne's reporting, at lunch, this Saturday, 23rd of January, 1971, Jim is out on the heroin, and this is Channel 1 right.
I say sound like it's more interesting than Hazel Moat. Maybe I haven't read that one yet.
You
I haven't read all of that one yet.
Oh, what one?
The Violet Buried Away.
Oh, Tarwater?
Yeah.
But you read Tarwater?
A little bit of it, just the first couple of chapters.
Well, yeah. Well, they get a little something for somebody.
I've already had a sandwich. I just had one of Ivanka.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. A whole bunch of.
Where'd you get it?
Well, I made it for Jim's lunch because he's going out in the woods today. He was. He got up at 7 and ate breakfast and took off and came back about 8 o'clock. Well, yeah, about 8:15. Just. Hurry up, we're going out for the rest. He says, don't ask questions, just get dressed. And the equipment he's supposed to use is broken, so we came on out here. Saved me a day in the library.
That's a pretty Saturday.
Yeah.
What would you spend the day in the library for?
Well, I can't work at home because I've got all sorts of books there, and I end up reading everything but what I was supposed to read. Last night, well, I started on Charlotte's Web. I thought I'd better quit. I was supposed to write a paper next Tuesday. And I was going to work on that.
Charlotte's Web?
Next Tuesday.
Charlotte's Web?
Oh, I was going to read that. What happens, you see, I sit there at the desk, and the bookcase is right next to me. I look over the bookcase and see a book I haven't read in a long time. And so I get that and start reading it. Never do what I'm supposed to be doing.
What are you supposed to, what were you supposed to be doing?
What was I supposed to, I was supposed to be, well, I was rereading Wise Blood, but it's not as much fun the second time around.
So you picked up Charlotte's Web.
Yeah, about the first page where she rescues the pig.
You know, that's my trouble out here. I can't get much work done out here because I have to work through those things. I never enjoy working through anything. I don't care what it is. I don't enjoy working through it. See, I have to. I'm just tearing it apart all the time. I'm just digging into it. It's hard on me. So I go out and feed, pick up.
I just can't work at home anymore. I gotta go to the library to do it. And besides, at the library, you see, all my other girlfriends are there too. And we, every once in a while, we take coffee breaks about every hour. I'll go to Crystal and get a coat, and we talk. Then we come back and work some more, and go get lunch. Come back and work. Go back and have another coffee break. Meet there at night.
How's your little English friend?
Yeah. And she's fine.
What's she picking up?
Well, she's got Dr. Helston's course, too. I'm not sure. Oh, she's taking. Why on earth? I don't know. She's taking transformational grammar. The 602. I mean, I had that as an undergraduate, but you know, it's just a course for teachers. And she made an A in that history of English language, so I can see out why on earth she'd want to take another course in it. But she's taking that.
Making a A.
We got through. She said she'd never pass that test. She said she hadn't had a test like that in 7 years. Once she said she went to Trinity in Dublin. And she said they have those exams at the end of the year and never objective of their syllabus. Mm-hmm. So part of Dr. Angio's test was objective, just memorizing stuff. She said she'd never do it. She made an A. We were all worried about her.
Yes, I think I remember you said that.
Showed it all up.
Well, she write witty. She good company?
Most of the time, yeah. And she and Carol.
Are they the principal?
Yeah, she and Carol and Susan. And then there's a couple of other girls. Susan and I meet in the library. Usually in the afternoon, we go to Crystal.
It's nice to have it close by, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you get a seat over there?
Well, we don't stay there.
No.
We go over to the graduate center.
And then go sit on the porch.
Yeah.
If the sun shines.
Yeah. If the sun's not shining, we go inside.
I noticed this little Ann. Oh, she was out here one of the first times.
Mm-hmm.
And seemed a little different from some of the other. And, you know, she's getting used to living in it. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Which one is like Ms. Mom?
Carol, kind of,
Carol.
I guess. She's got that, you know, real laughing all the time.
Ms. Baum doesn't have time to go to the Crystal?
Oh, yeah. We do in the afternoon, because she works in the morning. From 9 till 1 or something.
Oh.
So, I mean, sometimes we go for lunch, and she has to wait around the library till John comes after at night. So she gets tired of it. She can't work at the library. So she either looks me up or I look her up, and off we go.
And she's working on the Owl and Nightingale.
Yeah. Or the Night and the Howlingale, she calls them.
Now, how did, Suzanne, how did she get off on a subject like that?
Well, and first of all, she likes the teachers in the, she likes Dwyer, and she likes, what is that her name's name? Parts of the B, I think.
Yes, Suzanne, a little by some.
Well, she likes those teachers a lot better than she likes some in the contemporary literature. And then she likes medieval literature, especially Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. And so she told me that when she's in Dr. Herbert's class, when she was working on Shakespeare, she was working on medieval law. And she heard that this Owl and Nightingale was supposed to be a lot of controversy, whether it was supposed to be demonstrating ecclesiastical law or secular law in the court. So that's what she did. She looked up all these ancient law books and translated the poem. And now she's trying to write a piece. I think she likes the pieces about as much as anything.
Dying.
Mm-hmm. I forgot what her name is. I was thinking Bower, but I don't think that's right.
And she, none of it is based on experience.
It's not. I don't have any knights riding around anymore.
For that.
that little chicken coop out at Hawthorne. Remember that? She used to talk about. But you know, she really never knew anything about that, except a little bit in the school. You see, where she saw two headed horns. No, she had been up on that porch, hadn't she?
Yeah.
She went in the house and spoke to the man.
Oh, yeah.
One time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's more than she's done to the hour than I know.
You know, I mean, part of the attraction of that might be because it's so old.
It's entirely out of this world.
Well, she never gets real serious about it, though. She just has fun with it. She translated the whole thing. Dwyer told her, you didn't have to do that. She said, I wanted to. She didn't even do it in prose either. She tried to keep it in the meter and all.
Is that right?
Why she ran?
She did.
She'll look back at there and wonder why in the dickens she ever did that.
She may make a medievalist, you never know. She may disavow the modern world.
Experience.
Well, it's funny though, she's crazy about Dr. Robinson. She thinks she's really great. And this course that she's sitting in, I don't know if she's going to. We did a couple of nights. Is on the modern world, and his main idea. Well, he started off first of all saying that the central experience of the modern world is a visit to the Malabar Cave, where Mrs. Moore hears all the noises that people make, you know, from the baby crying to a little erudite poem or anything. All comes out of this monosyllable. And it just kind of shatters her conception of order in the world. And he says, that's the modern world. You don't have any order anymore. And what's left is the individual has to make his own. Well, we're sitting there, and it's kind of fun in a way because he gets real, you know, these ethereal realms, you know. And every once in a while he comes back down to earth, but it's fun in a way. And with Shaw, the thing that he points out most of the time is, in Pygmalion, he's talking about how Higgins sort of makes Eliza, but in the end it's Eliza who claims her own personality, you know, rather than Higgins giving it to her. But he kind of goes on that. Just the end of it. But he's just like all the girls sitting there because he's real handsome. They just kind of sit there and look at him.
That's much more in their favor.
There were six in the class last quarter, and this quarter there are 27 people in there. And I guess about 2/3 of them are girls. And I think the word's gotten around.
A little work goes on.
A little bit.
Lighthearted.
throws me if I get tickled in class. There's one woman, and now I guess it was last week, we were talking about Jane Eyre, and one man was doing this dissertation on Christic imagery in Jane Eyre. And of course, he monopolized the entire class. Anytime anything would come up, it wouldn't matter what the discussion was on. That he'd bring that into it, you know. Everybody just kind of sat back and let him talk.
No, what was that?
Christic. He called it Christic imagery in Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
And what really started off the discussion was Dr. Hellstrom couldn't see why in the world Bronte should end her book with that reference to St. John River, the missionary. And this other boy and some of the other people in class said, well, it's because it, she's got such this emphasis on religion in there that she wants to, she's already settled her problems, but she's decided to look at life, you know, make her own way. And St. John is looking for the next world. So she just ends it that way. I said, could be she's just taking her readers into account because they'd want to know what happened to her.
Any abstraction like that, you know, is useful only insofar as it is fruitful. I mean, it's true insofar as it's fruitful. There's no way of getting to the heart of modern experience to write a large subject.
I was interested in what you said about Hellstrom, that he did give you a chance to work things out. You had a feeling that you were doing it.
Yeah.
Got it together, and he wasn't just giving you answers.
Yeah, what he does, of course, you know, you read your paper, not the whole paper, just sort of a summary of what you've written. And he'll get somebody else to ask you a question about it. And so your paper sort of provides a subject for about 20 minutes. And things, you know, they never stay on one track very long because something else will come up. But if other people aren't asked or don't have a question, because a lot of times it's hard to, you know, think about what the other person has said long enough to have an intelligent question about it, he'll bring up something, an objection or support or something like that, and then it just kind of keeps going like that. He never sits in the same place.
Oh, really?
Because he moves around. He says he doesn't want to look like the lecturer.
Is that
right? So he just kind of scoots around. I'm right in the middle of class, everybody goes over to Crystal. Crystal must get a kickback from them or something.
Right, but in the middle of a class?
Well, we in for about an hour and a half, and then take a half hour break, and then come back for the last hour. He's a really ripper.
Oh, it's all in one session?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Tuesday
night.
I like it better that way.
You know, there's many of those little abstractions floating around at that. A lot of times you see one, you think, well, you got a hold of something, but it's not any. It's a few of them are profitable. I ran into this one, The Pursuit of Happiness. Someone used it on the television, and I got to, it just stuck in my mind, and I just thought about Tarwater. And he'd repudiate that. The Pursuit of Happiness would be a low form of object to live by. Almost like Emily says at the end of a little poem, he says, and Father, you are punctual. Punctuality in Poor Richard, you see. Yeah, it is a minor version.
falls on Tara Wilder on that one. Of course, on any of her books, they all go back to the idea of grace and salvation, which is fine. But what happens in my last class? Half the students were Jewish, and of course, they had absolutely nothing to do with them. That sort of thing.
Grace and salvation.
Yeah.
That's right. Paul, they don't think in terms of terms at all.
Yeah. Well, last quarter, when we got to that Eliot poem, the Magi, well, you know, I was reading, of course, growing up in a Presbyterian background, you know, I could see, you know, the three trees on the low sky and all things like that. But a lot of kids in the class didn't even know what the Magi were, much less the story behind it. So, got to I found that out later on. I thought, oh, great.
That's sort of shocking to think that Protestants and the experience don't get you that far.
I'd like to see something done on Tarawada.
I'd like to listen in once they get a toehold in Flannery Connor. I don't know how she got into the, got to be chosen. Who did it or why? I'd like to listen into the discussions once they sort of get a hold of her to see what they make of it. And she has the violent bad way. And now, I'm a little hard on a good number of this thing. I can tell when I get any sense out of it, and I don't get any sense out of that. She uses the scriptural passage and the clear meaning of it about the kingdom of heaven in the violent bad way is that the enemies of the church word are too much, you see, for it. But her reading of it is that within the church it's violent rather than the righteous who bad way. I mean, that's the broad distinction, that's it. But what good that does, I don't know. It's been a traditional thing to pin your meaning onto awkward statements. Or for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And all it does is it just make you think you know, or else convince you that you don't know. it doesn't help. Now, I mean, and Lowe's, in that beautiful old saying of his, you see, on Coleridge's Ancient Mariner, you can't find anything in there because all of the chapter headings are like that. You don't know what he's talking about. And after you get in the chapter, very often you don't know what he's talking about. It's very difficult to follow it. So you see, they can trip you before you get into it, with the title. And you see, As I look at the institution up here, you see, they just allow you to flounder all through those owls and nightingales, you see. There's absolutely no telling where you'll turn up. If you do turn up. You may just pop up at the crystal. That may be where you wind up. And some job, you know, you can get a job without any light.
Once you're in, they just let you go. You go where you want to.
That was a nice little Sunday school forum this morning. It was the prodigal son. And they just took it in the sense, you see, that the son has followed his own leads and gone down here, you see, even with the swine. And he's afraid to come home because he's ashamed, you see. But they took a right nice view of it, said, your parents or the church, or you just come in and say, I'm goofed. It was right nice. But you still don't know anything about his experience. When he comes in and says, I goofed. There's so many ways of losing, you see. What you ought to find out is what the hell he done. And look at it. And let him look at it. See, he won't look at it himself. He just cut it off and say I'm goofing and think about something else and get back in the church or with his father. Well, that may be the wrong thing to do. You ought to live with it. Stay with it. Like one of my friends came by, he came out here to see me but missed me and went by the place over here. Saw him sitting out, you know, by the store, and he says he didn't know, he didn't stop, just drove by. But he saw him out there on that little store. Talking about old times.
So somewhere in the book he read that he stood on the center store to tell him about old times.
Yeah.
And he couldn't be farther off.
Now, as I read, you see, I know Connor in that light. I see the fiction of it, and I see the agility of her mind. But what I learned to do that in that little class we had together in the bear, where the fiction stopped. And where you could see the experience. And you remember old Ash drove Boone to, what was he going to do to him? In order to heckle him, that wasn't the word.
No. He was going to tell him that they'd go ahead and start hunting with him.
Yes. And that's, he drove him in that old wagon. See, that's not fiction. That looks like it's that. I was here. Well, you see, I'm not interested in Flannery O'Connor's superstructure on grace or free will, whatever she writes about, vocation, you can call it any of those things. I somehow want to make contact with old Tarwater. Well, I try, when Frances was here for your sister. She's had a good deal to do with religious subjects, much more than I have. And couldn't quite make it, you see. Even with all their background, they couldn't quite get in touch with Tarwater. Now, we broke it up that he was ascetic. And that's a pretty strong element. But that's all I could do. And I still have it. So you think you've got a hold of something and it doesn't work out. And all those extraordinary expenses she puts little Tarwater through, young Tarwater, it's frightening. It is frightening. And it's all abstractions that she has, can't possibly know a thing about.
Her fiction kind of never stops.
Huh?
Her fiction never stops. It seems like. I think about that preacher I met at the revival. Quite a bit different than the one she's speaking to.
Yeah. Now she's gifted, there's no doubt. You don't remember that little tape, first one I made over here. I call it the Three Studies. Don't you know Mr. Morgeson talks about the Wallace? And he was so strong in his statements, it sounded like he was just revolutionary, just going to tear things up. But I kept looking at it and studying it, and I found that he was saying the same thing as others. He's just riding a thesis. Do you remember that? That's what we worked on. That's what I found. Jean Herbert was out here. She heard a lot of that. He made that strong statement, but all he did was write a thesis. He wrote it. And he wasn't saying anything anybody else didn't say. Now, see, in your fiction, if you press your point too much, you see, you destroy the experience. You see, Faulkner doesn't do that. Faulkner doesn't write an idea.
Oh no!
In the Hamlet, there you see, he got such a loose, far away thing. He's watching Snopes take over, but. He goes all up and down the countryside with him, taking over. And there's no abstraction. There's no superstructure.
Dr. Luska could find you a few. Dr. Luska could find you some.
Yeah, you can rewrite it in terms of that. Make statements.
That's mother. Dr. Lisko and I had him use that book. And what we got was the idea of Eula as sort of an earth goddess. Slim Snopes is a representative of the modern world who sort of rapes nature. Has nothing in common with it, just uses it.
Yeah.
He used that idea all the way.
Yeah.
It's part I liked in there. Well, part of it was the way Ratliff talks about buying a goat. sitting on the storefront.
Well, we'll be able to watch and guy can talk with him.
Bookwright keeps trying to shut him up so we won't lose his money.
Wait a minute, yeah, I thought was high.
All right.
He said the car was ready for it.
Yes, sir. Just put them in with the plugs? Well, that's nothing. That's no. If you lose, you don't lose much, do you? Well, if there's no more than that, well, that's fine. I appreciate it. Sure, sure, sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. The car's not ready.
Yeah.
Well, you know how.
That's fine. They're just cost the same price as about the price of a plug, see?
Yeah.
Now, I just sure, and you know that's the old thing that we work on is all. I'm not, that's all I was doing. But even so, it gives you something to take hold of when they talk. And then you can see what Ms. Baum does. You know, she has a perfect right to go off, follow her own direction. But you see, you've got something to sort of hold on to see it. That's what I like about it. I don't feel helpless, just quite as helpless where. Well, everything just one thing's good as another. I think that's ridiculous. One thing's good as another. You can't hear the tractor going.
Yeah, I hear it.
Can you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess when Jim gets hungry, he'll. Did he have a bite?
No, I've got chili out in the car. Not six for him. Oh. I told Faye earlier today that. About Dr. Helstrom's class the first weekend after we got home from Houston. We hadn't been down to Cocoa yet, and then he signed that paper the first week. Well, that just knocked me for a loop. I just kind of had me all shook up. So when we went home that weekend after he signed it, they talked about that place up there, but I couldn't listen. It just got on my nerves. So. And I was trying to figure out, well, why should it? And in this particular case, other than the fact that I was worried about the patient. But I could sit in there and listen to them about 30 minutes, and then I'd have to leave. Because View was going on about his trees. What kind of trees he's planted. And he and Charlie gotten up there and grafted some new sort of apple branches onto the old trees. And they planted about 10 trees, different kinds, and pears and apples too. And every time we'd all get together, of course, well, he'd start talking about the ranch or the place up there. And I kept wondering, well, why is it bothering me so much this time? And then I realized it was something my mother had said. Because now they've got this you and Jim have got this new idea. Jim's, as soon as he would get out of school, you see, he doesn't want to go right on to school, and he doesn't want to go right on to work. He wants to goof off a while. So what we're supposed to do is go up there with them, and Jim's going to help his dad build a house and all. And for, you know, for a while. Poor Jim either goes back to school or starts over, or starts working. Well, I went home. This is fine with me. I thought this would really be fun, and I was looking forward to it, trying to figure out how I could manage to get through school the same time Jim would. So when I went home, I told Mama about it, you know, and she said, "That's a terrible idea." She said, "Don't you realize what's going to happen to Jim?" She said, "All those other fellows who graduate the same time as him are going to get ahead of him in their jobs. He'll be behind them." And I let that stupid thing worry me to death. And so every time View would start talking about their plans, Jim would, of course, get right into it because he's planning to go, too, and work on it. And it just kill me because all the time, Mama just had this plan, this idea in my mind where that was worrying me about Jim not being able to.
And you didn't know it.
No, I didn't realize it. It just kind of...
Is that something?
Yeah.
But...
And she said, "Isn't that awful?" But I couldn't listen.
I couldn't. I would sit there and it would just irritate me for them to be talking about that. Well, I'd leave.
Suzanne, what is the calendar on that?
Let's see. If you doesn't get laid off at Packard, he's supposed to retire next October and go up then. They're planning to go up for 3 or 4 weeks this summer and start then. You know, line up a contractor and then go up in October. But I think that they're going to change their plans a little bit because trying to build a house in the winter in Georgia is not going to be very easy. And what they're planning to do now, there's this old shack on the place, real, real old house, and they're going to stay in it, fix it up a little bit, and spend a couple of days in that shack and then spend a night at Betty's house. It's about a half hour's drive, so they can bathe and build a house that way. Well, Jim gets through in August, and I'm, the way things look, I won't be through until 2 quarters after that. I'm not sure he's going to want to wait on me, and I don't think I'd want him to. So I don't know how that's going to work out.
And he'll have his master's in August?
Yeah, booked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they decide they don't want to work on a house in the winter, he'll go on and work until, say, May, and then go up. And they'll start in the summer. But anyway, they're doing it. I think Jim's planning on going with him.
Well, now, what's Jim's thinking on it?
Well, Jim wants to go with him.
You mean in pursuit of happiness?
I don't know. No, just for a while. I guess he just... I'd say attached to his dad and his family. And he's tired of school. He's about ready to chuck it last Christmas. He said, "I wish I'd been a plumber." He's mad at his teacher because he said, "You always have to be nice to them." He says, "When they do something rotten to you, you've got to just ride with them. Ride with it, and you can't tell them off." I wish I was working for myself.
What have they done?
Well, the thing that set him off, he'd written a paper and worked real hard on it. And when he handed it in...
I'll be right back.
It's interesting, you know, because he's conscientious.
My ear is itching in case you...
Go ahead.
Well, what happened, he wrote this paper for a teacher, and he worked real hard on it. And he'd been working hard all quarter. He had 13 hours. So, in his paper, he Xeroxed statistics charts and things that he was using as references, and he stapled them. You know, he'd tie it and then leave this blank area to put the chart in, and he'd staple the chart in.
Yeah.
Well, he'd done this before for another teacher, and the other teacher said it made a real neat paper, so he did it again. And the teacher he handed it into the next day called him in his office and just really wrote him up and down for doing it. He's saying, you know, what the hell is this? You know, why is it stapled in? He says, would you hand something like that into your boss? And Jim explained that his supervisor of his work said that when he done it before, said it was a nice way of doing things. Now, this teacher got real upset about it. And so it kind of, you know, it's kind of gotten Jim ticked off. And of course, he can't say anything because the guy's standing there with his grade book in his hand. And Jim was, you know, couldn't.
Have you got a little of that I can see?
What, the page?
Page, uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's all gone.
No, it's at home. No way. He never did pick up that paper.
Well, I'd love to see that.
He's got the first one he did last summer.
Well, that
summer.
Would be all
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love to see it. See what it did. I might get an idea, you know. When these things come up, you know, if you got the stomach for it, you know, you can pick up a whole lot.
Well, the second baby, he never has gone to pick that up. I said, did you, when we got back, he got his grades, you know, he made a B in the course. I said, did you ever find out what you made on the paper? He said, no, I haven't gone by to see. But the whole way home, right after he'd handed it in, that teacher had gotten on to him for that. He just, you know, just gloom.
He came out of the mouth.
Then all of a sudden, he says, I wish I'd just been a plumber. just gets tired of having to be nice to people when they're not nice to you.
When I in that I thought over in Jim's apartment they were just idyllic. Nobody got on anybody else's nerves.
Oh. No. The teachers might not get on each other's nerves, but they got bad teachers, just like any department. People that are just real kind of unreasonable sometimes. This man, I don't think, was being unreasonable. It does look kind of funny to see something stapled in another paper. You know, he could have taped it in and glued it or something. But
it seems so small, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what got him. You know, why does the guy get so upset about staples when he hasn't even read the paper yet? See if there's anything bad in the paper. It's like some of the English teachers over there, the freshmen. There's one man in there, if you had five spelling mistakes, he'd give the kid a zero. Man, that's stupid.
But that's something, you know, to let, if you think about you and their talk, you know, if your mind can be closed to things, occupied with something else.
I've been in the same place many a time. I just get in such a frame of mind, I don't care what it is, I just can't listen to it. I could just give you case after case. If at any other time, you know, I could really, you know.
Suzanne said she doesn't know Miss Annie. And, it'd be nice, you see, Suzanne would go down, and I would go down together and get Miss Annie.
Miss who?
Miss Annie. Coleman.
Oh, yes, yeah.
She doesn't know Coleman on Miss Annie. I was just thinking we'd have a good excuse, you see. And,
they ought to come over here and get some of that hay I've been saving for them. And I told him, before, but see, I've got no contact with him. I could write him a letter to the store, but see, then I can't get, he won't write me a letter and tell me he's coming.
So, we could go down and see what we were hoping, get Dave and Miss Annie up here together.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Uh-huh. And I was thinking we could see then I could go down and we could then go make contact and then we could, if Dave is home. Saturday's not too good a day.
They visit so much on Saturday, see?
Yeah.
And then his sister comes over, or she goes over,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah.
And their mind is not, they can't disengage.
Mm-hmm. But, now you see, Miss Annie has asked 2 or 3 times where that Miss Jackie is.
Yeah.
And she was a student who came out here a lot for a while. And she was fascinated with the Colemans, and she'd go by
yeah.
and see them. And she learned them. And she'd take them little things, and she made it a hangout place.
Yeah,
and
just go by there.
And his aunt would say,
see, you could go by there on the way home. It's not much out of the way. You know where it is.
No, she doesn't.
You don't think?
So I thought I'd show her, and I could go and remind Coleman. You know, maybe tomorrow afternoon or something. One time, Suzanne could go with me, and then she could make that make a little. That they're really, you know, they really.
You know, she knows them.
Did
she?
Never saw them. Uh-uh. I don't think so. But they are part of this countryside.
Yeah. That's what you ought to do when you come out here read Nature Valley.
You're in a hard time. I like them and Jane here, but too.
Like, considered in a library, considered in a library. Right. Suzanne ought to hear that little fishing thing in the stage. One of these days.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll go get those horses.
Horses.
You know how to get the horses out?
Well, it looks like a European.
I said, did she know how to get the horses out? And she said, well, just go get a pitchfork of hay. And somehow or other, the thing cut off. And this is 7:50. Channel 1 right, 7:50 on this new tape. This is Suzanne. Saturday, the 23rd of January, 1971, on this new tape. This is Suzanne, this Saturday, the noon, the 23rd of January, 1971. This is Suzanne on new tape, Channel 1 Right, around 7:50, Channel 1 Right, on 7:50, Channel 1 Right.